Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling. Joining us for today's episode, Leighton makes his return to the podcast once again. Got a couple of news items we'll talk about, and of course, our Looking Ahead segment. We're going to talk in news, at least, about Spartan Nash and their success wholesaling, which might mean good things for the independent grocery industry. And we'll also talk about Five Below, who released their latest earnings this past week. A quick reminder, the obligatory show reminder that you can rate us or like us on whichever podcast listening service you happen to subscribe to. If you enjoy the show, those likes, those ratings, etc., help others that happen to be interested in retail seek us out and find us out. You can also check us out on Instagram at Retail Podcast, where Leighton actually posted some pictures of a very fancy Family Dollar I was by in Cloudcroft, New Mexico. Cloudcroft, a town of about 600 people. It does swell during the summer as it is a tourist town, but go check out those pictures of that Family Dollar because all wood facade looked very nice and certainly the center of retail in that town. So as I mentioned, we'll begin with an earnings call from a retailer we haven't discussed in depth in some time on the podcast, and that is Five Below. We haven't really done a deep dive on them for a little over a year, and this is a company that saw wholesale closures during the beginning of the pandemic. They mostly reopened their stores throughout the country by June, and they mostly continued their sharp growth curve even during the pandemic, a growth curve that is going to ramp up even further in the coming months. Issues we've talked about recently on the show, though, we thought at least might provide some pressures to the company coming into this earnings call. For example, freight costs has been a topic on a lot of retailers' minds and in a lot of retailers' mouths over the last couple of months. Sourcing product at a continued low cost as well has been something that's been mentioned on earnings calls. And you look at Five Below, their overall concept, of course, that might provide a bit of a squeeze on their bottom line over the next few months. But those concerns were allayed somewhat by management on the call. And all things considered, they released earnings this past Thursday where analysts expected earnings per share of 66 cents per share. Five Below still able to outdo that. But Leighton, before we get to the earnings, a quick refresher here on Five Below and where they currently stand as a company, because they are growing so rapidly. Since we haven't covered them for about a year and a half on the show, it's probably a good idea to kind of reestablish a primer.
Yeah, they were an actual stock pick for us 4 or 5 years ago, a huge growing company now. They're a relatively recent retailer as far as brick and mortar companies are concerned, having been founded in just 2002. Much of their focus over the last 6 years or so has been on location growth, as they've been aggressive in brick and mortar growth and exploring new markets. All that said, there are still untouched markets throughout the U.S. From their Philadelphia home, they're still working to go into the Mountain West, as an example. No stores as of yet on the Front Range south of Denver. That's why the company sees the runway to over 25 total U.S. stores. I think they have a huge vision for the company. I think you can really see that in the spots where they are growing, a little bit of a different demographic than they've looked at historically. Even still, they've currently got 1,087 stores in 39 states. And although their location growth has slowed somewhat recently, only the pandemic could slow their sales. Their average new store payback is less than 1 year, which certainly explains why they've been so aggressive in terms of growth. Just for our listeners out there, store payback just essentially means the rate of return on a new store opening, all of those expenses that come with opening a new store, administrative expenses, hiring expenses, stocking those shelves for the first time with merchandise. It's extremely expensive, but that return on that investment is quite high for Five Below, even in those new markets that I alluded to. One final note, when last we left Five Below, they were integrating certain products over the $5 price point and were building out their e-commerce platform even further. Their main target demo is tweens and teens, and this is borne out in their 8 worlds, they say, or product categories. We'll talk about just in a little bit. Tech, create, play, candy, room, style, party, and new and now. All right, Trent, let's get into those earnings. No surprise here that sales jumped pretty significantly versus their first quarter of 2020. Their first quarter runs through approximately May 1st each year. As such, they saw store closures for around 40% of the quarter last year. As such, their net sales were up 197.6% year over year. Earnings per share jumped 91% over 2019. It was negative, of course, in 2020 with the store closures. Speaking of earnings per share, they beat analyst estimates by about 33%, coming in at 88 cents per share. The company spent most of the call comparing numbers when they could to 2019, since, of course, the first quarter of 2020 wasn't so great because of, you know, the whole world shutting down because of the pandemic. To that end, their comp sales were absolutely stellar in the most recent quarter. So the company's management doing their best job to try to compare apples to apples and not mislead investors or analysts on the call. Compared to stores that were open in 2019, comps are up 23%. This is a massive jump for a retailer in a pseudo post-pandemic landscape as we start to see spending numbers filter back into line with pre-pandemic status. For Five Below, this indicates perhaps some pent-up demand as tweens and teens are going back into their stores and purchasing their new items. More importantly for them, their data indicated that some of the third round of stimulus payments found their way from parents to their kids, or at least was spent for the benefit of their kids. We should keep in mind that their sales numbers may look even better in the second quarter of 2021 as vaccinations open up slowly to those 16 and sometimes under, and parents potentially become more comfortable with their kids going back into the public sphere, as though they haven't already been going back to school and other extracurricular activities. But you do, at least anecdotally, Trent, we spoke about this before recording, we see a lot of kids, parents, everyone going out and shopping, even in those stricter states now that have been opening up, such as California. Anyhow, when you combine the great comps with the fact that they continue to rapidly open new stores, 68 in the first quarter alone, net sales, Trent, were up 64% over 2019's first quarter.
And so again, that is 64% over the course of a two-year stack. And Leighton, you mentioned it, of course, restrictive states such as California. I was just in New Mexico this past week, a state that up until the last month or so had been absolutely closed to outside visitors or visitors from outside the state. Shopping malls there, shopping districts were very full. And something that we've also seen, again, from earnings calls, mall retailers, mall-based apparel retailers, sales there even looking pretty good over 2019. But back to Five Below, his CEO, Joel Anderson, was quick to point out that those 68 new stores you mentioned, Leighton, in the quarter, that's a record for the company. They also entered Utah for the first time with 7 stores in the Salt Lake City Metro. That's something where, again, Leighton mentioned early on, they've kind of been hesitant to enter into the Mountain West. They're starting to crack that nut a little bit. Their expansion further west should be helped with the opening, by the way, of their Arizona distribution hub in late summer, and one would think that that hub would probably serve those new Utah stores as well. Also, their new store in Lubbock, not quite the Mountain West, but pretty close, just a couple hours away from the Front Range, set their all-time grand opening record for sales. And that's incredible, considering the reduced store hours that they've got to work with, and decreased marketing also that's accompanied the recent openings. They've kind of rolled back the marketing because they don't want stores to be slammed for social distancing purposes. So the fact that Lubbock set this all-time sales record for a new store, that's pretty remarkable considering the conditions going on the macro level. Now, as an aside, we talk about that marketing spend. Their marketing spend as a company is on track to be just around 2% of overall revenue. That is much lower than in the past, much lower than a lot of growing retailers will often come in at. And overall, they still aim to open 170 to 180 new stores during the year. That will increase their footprint by over 15% versus where it was at the conclusion of 2020. So they are continuing growth at that breakneck pace. Well, Leighton talked a little bit about the worlds and the categories for Five Below. What did that breakdown look like in terms of sales for the company? Well, candy, for one, that category recovered from the Easter closures last year, so we expected good year-over-year sales and certainly got it benefiting from Easter in the quarter this year. Beyond that, they noted strength in the subcategories of games and toys within their sports world. So sports as a world encompasses those two things. They still see games and toys selling fairly well. Tech, that has been a historically strong category for them going back about 5 or 6 years. That continued the strength in the first quarter of 2021. Gaming products there led the way in that world. Apparel sales under the style world also saw a strong uptick over 2019. Again, we're seeing people flow back to apparel after, you know, not really going much of anywhere over the last 15 months. Now, obviously, if you're a teen or a tween, you've been going to school probably some of the time, or at least part-time in most markets. Some markets, you're going to school full-time, but still seeing that uptick in terms of apparel sales. And then the room category sees a bit of a tail as well in terms of those increased sales you saw in 2020. The increased sales, maybe not to the extent that they popped in mid-2020, but you're still, as I mentioned, seeing that tail of increased sales linger on into the first quarter of this last year. Again, due to work from home and school from home probably being the biggest emphasis there for Five Below. And one of the things with this category, this room category, Anderson noted during the call is that this Five Beyond extension, and again, these are the products over $5, not available in all stores just yet, but that's really allowed them to build out the room world. When you think about trying to keep furniture under a $5 price point, it's very difficult. So instead, Anderson and the company with this Five Beyond has given buyers leverage to maybe spot out different products that they can carry for, let's say, $10 to $15 that are still very, very good deals for the consumer, but maybe encompass things like tables and other room furniture that allow, again, their main customers to school from home, basically. And because of that, these Five Beyond stores, which is about 20 to 25% of stores currently, have been seeing a big boom in room sales. And one of the biggest reasons why you see this increase linger on into 2021. And we should note the Five Beyond extension, like I said, they have a goal of about 30% of their overall stores to have this Five Beyond by 2021. The way they build out their stores is kind of like Dollar Tree. When you go to a Dollar Tree that's got the extended price points in it, Five Below doing the same thing. Oftentimes you're seeing this Five Beyond section in the back of the store, so it requires a bit of a store refresh, and they're hoping to do this in conjunction with a few other projects we'll talk about later on here in covering this earnings call. And by the way, another subcategory within room is pets, and that's also seen an uptick. And basically what you're seeing here is management talked about an upward spiral on the earnings call. Management saw an increase in demand for pet products due to the pet adoption push in 2020. Many pet adoption centers ran out of pets, in fact, during this past year. So as a result, Five Below said, hey, let's increase our SKU count in this area. Let's increase our inventory in this area. That resulted in a further uptick in sales as it drew customers' attention towards their pet products or their pet subcategory under the room world. So positivity there, certainly, as far as this is concerned, for Five Below. And it's interesting that they note this because, of course, we've mentioned on previous earnings calls with the likes of Chewy that they've really benefited from those new so-called pet parents as well. And Leighton, that's not this Five Beyond, as I mentioned, it's not the only initiative they're in the midst of trying to roll out to stores.
Another initiative, one that's often getting added to stores along with Five Beyond, is the increased introduction of associate-assisted self-checkout, what they call ACO. ACO is in most of the Five Beyond stores, but they want expansion to be even quicker here, about 60% of the store base by year's end. Adding the self-checkout option, they hope, will free up some of the front-end employees to flex to the sales floor as needed. If you've ever been into a traditional Five Below store, the front-end employees are usually sequestered somewhat behind the long counter there, making it difficult for them to easily transition to the sales floor. By opening this up, they feel as though they can better leverage associate engagement with customers on the floor while speeding up also front-end throughput. This makes logical sense, at least for us. Finally, about those questions we asked at the beginning regarding potential cost increases and supply chain issues that other retailers are noting. Well, Five Below as a company feels pretty good about things right now. When pressed in the analyst Q&A on the call, Anderson said that they are locked up with contracts through the year, over 90% contract versus spot ordering, in fact, which is notable here because logically, if you have the contract price, they typically, as a supplier, you have to abide by that. Also, he noted the fact that they have a treasure hunt concept allows for product substitution. So rather than being wedded to one type of product or one type of brand, if prices begin to rise, they can shift their focus and along with it, their in-store marketing to kind of tailor to a different price point or different market overall. As a result, out of stocks aren't really out of stocks for them. They just replace them with a new item. Anderson credited the customer's mindset for this. He said that customers aren't really often looking for a specific product, but rather to solve a problem, such as getting a gift for a birthday and so on. And one thing to watch out for, at least for us, is the rising wage environment, rather. So to this point, they've been able to leverage COVID as a way to trim store hours and therefore associate hours. If those hours extend again in the future, you could see that that could cut in to margin somewhat for them on the operations front. However, their hourly pay is always likely to be a little bit lower than other retailers based on the sheer number of 16 and 17 year olds that they have working for them in their stores. And I think Anderson noted this on the call as well. And I think, Trent, you often speak on this podcast about the wage environment and how this is going to affect margins for retailers. It is interesting because a lot of retailers, QSRs in fact as well, in the restaurant industry can pass those expenses on to the customer with a higher price point. With them, they are pretty much fixed in the majority of their selection. So I am curious to see if they're able to maybe squeeze their suppliers more in order to make up for that. But it is an interesting dynamic that not just them, not just Five Below is faced with, but a lot of other retailers right now in the current environment.
I think one thing Anderson kind of hinted at is that a lot of the 16 and 17 year olds honestly are just looking for a part-time job, just kind of happy to have the job, happy to have extra money. So it's not a situation there where they're worried about a lot of full-time employees, especially seeking benefits, seeking increased pay, especially in an area where we don't talk about this often because we're a retail podcast, but you're seeing rising rent prices in much of the U.S., rising housing prices in much of the U.S. This is something that really doesn't touch a lot of those 16 and 17-year-olds that they were speaking of. And as you mentioned, their price point relatively fixed, at least for now, until the Five Beyond gets rolled out to a larger number of stores. So interesting dynamics there, but right now, Five Below looks as though they're in a pretty good spot. The store hours thing is kind of an area of focus for them because when they cut back store hours, they found that they were able to really concentrate sales within the hours that they were open, so they weren't open quite as late. Not sure that they're going to go back to their original store hours anytime soon, simply because of the success that they've seen in terms of cutting costs, in terms of making it such that there's that perceived scarcity in terms of time that you've got to get to Five Below before they close down. We've seen general merchandise retailers, grocers, generally return to their pre-pandemic hours, but Five Below lingering just a little bit on their pandemic hours schedule. We're coming up after this. We'll discuss independent grocery through the lens of Spartan Nash, and we'll talk a little bit more about the hiring crunch that we're seeing retailers experience during that story. Well, as mentioned, up next, we focus on grocery and particularly independent grocery. We've started to see people return to restaurants during my trip to New Mexico, again, to bring that up. A lot of restaurants filled, long wait times. It was almost back to pre-pandemic levels. This has impacted sales of grocers, of course, who are lapping the upturn in panic buying and early pandemic shopping of 2020. And regarding that independent grocer portion, as we teased earlier, we often look to Spartan Nash for information regarding independent grocers because Spartan Nash not only operates their own grocery banners, but they supply a lot of independent operators and smaller chains throughout the country with product, particularly private label product. Anyhow, Spartan Nash released earnings late on Wednesday of this week, and this gave us some insight into the trends that they're seeing here.
As a backdrop to the earnings call, Spartan Nash appointed Douglas Hacker as chairman on Tuesday. Their C-suite has pretty much seen complete turnover since Tony Sarsam was named president and CEO in September of last year. For reference, this means 3 new executive officers, 6 VPs, and 11 directors since January 1st of this year alone. So when we say their C-suite has seen a complete turnover, it totally has. Earnings call, Trent. The call was for their first quarter that ran through April 24th. As with other grocery operators, this quarter anniversaried the pandemic buying of a year ago, meaning that we expected most numbers to be on maybe a decline on a year-over-year basis. And that's why, when possible, we'll be relaying the 2-year stack numbers to compare to 2019, as we did with Five Below. Still not a perfect comparison, since 2021 first quarter still featured pandemic conditions. Analysts were pretty much bang on in terms of earnings per share, with Spartan Nash coming in at 56 cents per share versus those expectations of 55 cents per share. So a little bit of a beat there. Net sales and comps were down an identical 7%. These comps are for Spartan Nash run stores, by the way. On that 2-year stack basis, so again, comparing back to 2019 first quarter, comps were up 9.3% in aggregate. So still really strong for the company. They did note that certain food distribution customers, an example, smaller chains and independents, continued to see growth in 2021, offsetting somewhat shrinking fulfillment for others. We should also note that Spartan Nash has a military segment to serve commissaries and the like. This segment also saw negativity as a result of military base access being restricted somewhat. A lot of people during the pandemic were not able to come on those bases. We think of family and friends of military members. Now, while an increase in orders for certain food distribution customers is a good thing for the overall grocery industry, it did have an ambivalent effect on their margins. For example, Spartan Nash's operating expenses went up 14.6% of net sales from 14.1% of net sales. And we ask why? Well, those freight and supply chain costs we've been talking about for nearly every retailer, that's why. Still, they managed to increase gross profit by 90 basis points as a percentage of sales. This owes to the fact that overall, wholesale work is larger margin for them, even with the shipping costs and the like, and they saw an increase in wholesale sales as it pertains to the overall sales mix. To break that down just a little bit further, food distribution sales were down 2.6% from last year. This despite the fact that Spartan Nash discontinued their fresh production operations. This seems to be a good indicator that many independents are seeing roughly even sales for the same period last year. As we mentioned, excellent news for the grocery industry as a whole, since 2020 was great in most areas. Overall, wholesale for Spartan Nash was up 14% over the first quarter in 2019. Food distribution now makes up more than half of Spartan Nash's revenue. That's 50.2% compared to 47.9%. last year. And Trent, one interesting thing that management noted on the call was a decrease in associate turnover.
And I think this is interesting because we're in a backdrop where we've been talking about retailers seeing employees, really an outflow of employees, struggling to get new employees in. And for Spartan Nash, this has been a big point of emphasis during the new regime. And so it's tough to tell whether their decrease in turnover was because of macro factors. And that, again, that's probably unlikely given all of the other retailers that are out there that have had trouble with finding associates, or whether it's due to internal factors. I think this is probably more likely as they've placed, as I mentioned, a lot of cash, a lot of effort into hiring and onboarding. So this all kind of remains to be seen. One other area they put a lot of money into is safety, because they mentioned during the course of the pandemic, they had hired a lot of new associates to kind of keep up with the volumes that they were seeing in terms of their wholesale division, particularly. Whenever you bring in new associates and you're in the wholesale business, safety is a big key. Of course, if you've ever been to a distribution center, you know there's likely to be forklifts whizzing around. There's likely to be a lot of heavy objects. So safety is a key. And they said they spent probably more money than a lot of other retailers did ensuring that safety was at the forefront of their employees' mindsets. And on this call, I found it was interesting. There was actually an analyst that asked a question to the leadership group about if they've seen an increase in efficiency or what have you. And they said, look, the efficiency is in people not getting hurt. Do you mean financial efficiency? Well, probably not. It's probably cost a little bit more money to ensure that we're hiring and onboarding people correctly and training them with a safety mindset. But long term, it will parlay itself into efficiency because of retention, because you're not getting employees hurt. So financial efficiency, maybe not at least in the short term, but in terms of overall organizational efficiency and their human focused structure, probably could make an argument that it has been efficient. And all of this has happened during a time when a lot of pandemic incentive payments within the company itself at SpartanNash to these associates, those were rolled back. So you're seeing associates stay with the company even though the extra payments have been rolled back. This affected their margins positively as they weren't making those payments to employees. At the same time, employees are staying with the company longer. They have built-in raises to a certain number of employees that are at the store there. And with the reduction in turnover, this too is saving the company money. And they called this out in terms of their overall margins. And in fact, their CEO, as Leighton mentioned, new since September of last year. He gave an anecdote on the call. One of their grocery stores in Michigan actually held a job fair for other employers. So not for SpartanNash, but for other employers. 60 companies were represented overall. They were seeking to fill a total of 500 jobs. And Leighton, only 4 people showed up. And so SpartanNash used this on the call as the backdrop to say, look, we are going to win what they called this war for talent here. We are going to pay our associates what they're worth. We're going to put time and effort into making sure that they know they're a valued part of the company, but also making sure that they know that their safety and health is of utmost importance. But that's an incredible anecdote. A job fair to fill 500 jobs. Only 4 people showed up. One other thing I wanted to mention on the SpartanNash call, and this came during the analyst Q&A, is the fact that they did speak to inflation. And these are, again, topics that we've talked about a lot in looking ahead segments on recent podcasts. Spencer Hannes, an analyst on the call, asked about inflation and what they've seen there. Inflation, they said, was pretty modest during the first quarter. Their new CFO, Jason Monaco, spoke to this. He said, you know, there's a lot of information out there in the public about potential inflation as it pertains to groceries. They have not seen that come to fruition, at least just yet. Most of their price increases are pretty modest. They do expect a little bit of an uptick in inflation going forward, but they see it as a potential good sign that they won't have to pass on as many of those costs to the customer as inflation has remained in check to this point during the quarter. So taken as a whole, some big takeaways here for SpartanNash doing an excellent job recruiting and retaining talent. Second, independent grocers, those independent grocers that SpartanNash serves, they are actually seeing sales more or less maintain from a year ago with SpartanNash's wholesale business just down in the 2% range. So that's a very good sign for the independent grocery industry. And then the third takeaway here, SpartanNash's banners continue to maybe not do as well as some of those independent grocers and small chains that they serve. This is pretty consistent with what we've seen with some prior quarters. So overall, 3 takeaways there from SpartanNash's earnings call this past week.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We've reached the final segment of the show, a segment we call Looking Ahead. Each Leighton and I will tell you about a story we're keeping an eye on over the next week, month, or year. We've talked to this point in the show about some stories that we've already seen other retailers keeping an eye on, like the hiring crunch, like inflation, like potential increased freight costs as well, is in the case of Five Below, where they're not actually seeing some of those things. Well, My looking ahead story this week has to do with my travels. I mentioned I was in New Mexico recently. I've been to a couple of other places recently as well. And one of the things that I've noted, and this is something that we don't talk often enough about on the show, partially because there are a lot of independent retailers out there that fall into this, but something that I paid particular attention to over the last couple of weeks has been tourism retail. Now, we shouldn't act as though there wasn't a tourism season in 2020. It was muted, especially in places like New Mexico that were shut off to the outside world, more or less. They didn't allow people coming from outside the state to basically vacation in the state without a 14-day quarantine. Now, I'm sure some people, of course, broke that rule, but I remember going to the Dakotas in August of last year and seeing tourism retail in pretty good shape. There are a lot of people there because, again, COVID levels were relatively low. Now, in my travels this year, tourism retail has certainly picked up. And again, we're talking about a lot of independent operators out there. I went to three different places in New Mexico, Alamogordo, Cloudcroft, and Ruidoso. All three places, I saw tourism retail really start to spike here. Stores were full again. In particular, there's a place north of Alamogordo, New Mexico, called Pistachio Land. It's got the world's largest pistachio. It's a 30-foot tall concrete pistachio outside, but it's a pistachio orchard and winery as well as a vineyard there. And the place was absolutely packed. It is a fairly large tourist attraction. Talking to the employees there, they said they saw a little bit of a benefit, believe it or not, from the pandemic last year in terms of marketing, because there was a show featuring Ozzy Osbourne. He came out to the pistachio farm with his daughter Kelly, created some pistachio flavors, that type of thing. That piqued interest a little bit in terms of locals there in New Mexico. But they are really seeing tourist season start to pick up to where they said it's not quite what it was in 2019, but still very solid. Now, for them, of course, because they're growing pistachios, they at least have a wholesale product. There's a lot of tourism retailers, like the ones I saw in Ruidoso, New Mexico, that didn't have that capability, where they sell a lot of t-shirts, they sell a lot of local knickknacks and the like, and it's very tough to sell those online because the whole goal is to sell those to visitors as a keepsake of having visited that place. Well, those retailers there, I talked to about three or four of them there in Ruidoso. They said that business was, again, pretty close to 2019. So the reason I'm looking ahead to this story and not just telling you about the places I'm visiting is because I think this is going to be something that's maybe not told of in the larger scale media, because, again, a lot of independent retailers in this space, but really looking at how the tourism retail industry bounces back, how many retailers might have closed down or were hampered in 2020, and also how they handle stock, because there were a lot of these retail stores that were out of certain items in stock already for this tourist season. So that's something I think worth keeping an eye on. And as our listeners, if they get a chance to travel throughout the country, something I encourage everyone to pay close attention to is what's going on in tourism retail right now. We're seeing a lot of people start to unfurl those pocketbooks, spend money on the experiences once again. And you'd have to think that tourism retail is going to benefit from that. And I think that's going to be additional dollars spent in the retail space as compared to, say, flowing out from a general merchandise retailer like Walmart or Dollar General. So a couple of dynamics in the space I'll be keeping a close eye on during the course of the summer and during my future travels, where I'll be in Michigan and Utah each of the next couple of weeks.
My looking ahead story is going to be relatively short, Trent. It has to do with the office supply retail market, with Office Depot and Staples, the two companies that have a major retail presence that are left in at least the U.S. economic presence. So we look at the landscape there. There's been a ton of consolidation and mitigation as far as the retail presence within that particular industry over the last few years, over the last decade, rather. Staples, back in 2016, as our listeners may remember, because we had talked about it on this very podcast multiple times, in 2016, they were denied a coming together between Office Depot and Staples, and it was mostly an antitrust reason. The judge at the time said that he's just simply not buying the argument that there are other competitors out there, despite Amazon getting into the business-to-business operations with office supplies, supplying paper and other office products to companies out there, and really competing highly now in that space. He still wasn't buying the idea that there are other retailers in general that would still be left to compete if Office Depot merged with Staples in a buyout opportunity on behalf of Staples. Staples now owned by Sycamore Partners. They recently had made in January a $2.1 billion acquisition offer again for Office Depot, the majority of their operations. There were some caveats in there. We won't get into the details, but that was turned down by Office Depot. And honestly, Trent, this is interesting because this latest piece of news this week, there is an update. The parent company of Staples, again, Sycamore Partners, has now made a $1 billion proposal to buy only the retail side of the Office Depot, and by the way, Office Max, when they had merged, but the Office Depot and Office Max retail operations, according to a press release. And this is interesting because Office Depot's response back in January, Trent, was one of pure negativity. They said, there's no way that this is going to happen again. Also in the background, and they may have even alluded to this, was, okay, we're going to have to go through this antitrust whole debacle again. And of course, that costs a lot of money with attorneys on all sides of the equation. And so in order to avoid that, I think that Staples has really spent the last 6-7 months to reorganize and come up with a plan that they feel is best for the overall office supply market. And that is to just take the retail operations. And this would essentially keep the e-commerce division of Office Depot separate and the business-to-business contracting business separate as well. And so, again, there's a lot of details in there. We don't know exactly what this would mean as far as who takes what and what gets split off. But we do know that CompuCom is getting split off from Office Depot. And so that could be in preparation for something like this to make things a little bit more streamlined in negotiations. But we do see that both companies have been okay over the last few years, in part due to the consolidation, the massive consolidation within their business sector. I do feel like this is interesting because Staples has made it a point over the last several months that they could go around the board and make a direct offer to those shareholders of Office Depot to say, hey, what do you want to do here? Do you want to negotiate basically based on a higher price point on the stock? And do you value that higher than the long-term prospects of Office Depot and Office Max operations staying in place and being as is? And so this is interesting, Trent, because you and I both know that a lot of Office Depot and Office Max locations are maybe right alongside a retail corridor next from a Staples. And we do feel, and we've talked about this, but we do feel that these 15, 20 plus thousand square foot facilities, it may be overkill in some over-retailed areas. Not in all markets, but in some markets. And I think that if anything really rings true to this, it's the fact that when Office Depot and Office Max joined forces a few years ago, there was a ton of closing of Office Max and Office Depot locations because they were so close to each other and so many larger, let's say 300 plus thousand metropolitan population areas. And I think that there is an opportunity for consolidation to really reap benefits in terms of margin and really streamlining those costs that are associated with having a store that's open. But factoring in all of that, that is to not say that they would not be faced with a lot of expenses in closing down these stores, because this is not a bankruptcy we're talking about. We're not talking about one store is fledgling and really needs to be bought out, and therefore maybe they could escape early lease termination clauses. This would be still very, very expensive, not only from the antitrust and the lawyering side of things, but just as far as the 1 to 2 years it would take to collectively combine these two operations and to maybe streamline the brand into the Staples brand. So I think this is very interesting, but definitely something to keep an eye on. And Trent, that is why this is my looking ahead story.
Yeah, a story that we talked a little bit about a few weeks back on the podcast in a similar vein, and now we're starting to see more of those intercompany splits. We kind of alluded to it, and Leighton, you've said this before in the past. I know I've said it before in the past on the podcast, but we know for sure that there will be one winner coming out of this whole ordeal, and that winner is going to be the lawyers that are working behind the scenes to try and make something work, because whether or not it does they're still going to get that paycheck. Well, that'll do it for us here on the Retail Focus Podcast. A big thanks to Leighton for rejoining us this week. I'm Trent saying so long until next week, and have a great 7 days.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.